And thanks for joining us here on Straight Talk. I'm Tim Gordon in for Stephanie Domerat. For more than 125 years, the Oregon Symphony has delighted music fans across our region and played a major role in the cultural life of the Pacific Northwest. Multi-Grammy nominated, the Oregon Symphony reaches more than 250,000 people each year. It also invests in education, community programs, and new bold ways to connect with audiences. Joining us today to talk more about the symphony and its future is its new president and CEO, Paul Snyder. Paul moved to Portland in 2019 to serve as the executive vice president at the Tillamook County Creamery Association. He also brings more than two decades of arts leadership experience with board service at the Atlanta Symphony, Atlanta Opera, and Portland Opera. Before that, Snyder led global sustainability efforts for Intercontinental Hotels Group, overseeing strategy for thousands of hotels worldwide. Paul Snyder, thanks so much for joining us today on Straight Talk. We sure appreciate it.
It's my pleasure to be here. Thanks for having me.
Great to have you. And as the new president, we got a lot of great questions for you about what's going on now and what's going to come up soon.
Yeah.
All right. Well, the first question we want to ask you is, of course, you're interim since July and now in the position as the permanent president. What made you decide that this was the right moment for you to lead the Oregon Symphony?
First of all, I've always loved the Oregon Symphony. From the moment that my wife and I moved here, we've been season subscribers, and from the very first concert I went to, I really appreciated the level of artistry of our musicians. They are an amazing group of artists, and the music that they put on stage is way above what anybody in a city of our size, quite frankly, should expect. And so that was just a thrill, the very first time going there, having gone to orchestras in all the major cities to really see what kind of quality we have on stage. And then just beyond even our classical programming, a lot of the really interesting and innovative music that the organization puts on stage at Arlene Schnitzer Concert Hall, it was great. It was kind of thrilling to just to see a lot of the innovation and inventiveness. So just start right there. You start with what's going on inside the hall is really just amazing. Then as I joined the board back in December to lead a strategic planning process for the board, which I had done at previous arts organizations, really came to understand what an extraordinary culture this institution has. We have a musician corps that are not only artists, but they're so community-minded and so generous with their time in terms of what they're willing to do for the community. We have a staff that's willing to do whatever it takes to get it done and done the right way at the highest levels of quality, and a board that is incredibly engaged in the mission of the symphony. And so when you put all those things together, both the art and the music that's on stage and the kind of people that I would get to work with, when the board asked me if I would consider this position permanently, it was a pretty easy choice.
Fantastic. And we're going to talk about strategic plan and connection to the community. What right now excites you most about leading the symphony at this moment?
Our role in the revitalization of downtown. You know, we put on shows over 100 nights downtown, and if you ask any restaurant or any parking garage attendant or any bartender downtown, they know what nights the Oregon Symphony is playing, because it's those nights that we're bringing tens of thousands of people down to the downtown core over the course of a year. And so our role in creating a really revitalized downtown is really central to our mission. So that's what really excites me. We are going to be putting on great stuff on the stage, and in doing so, helping the downtown revitalize itself and come back and be an even brighter future than anything we've known in the past. So that's the first thing that really excites me. The second thing is really the ability for us to find new ways to attract audiences into the music. We just completed this last fall a Sounds Like Portland Festival, where we highlighted Portland voices over the course of 2.5 or 3 weeks. And over while doing that, we actually brought in 5,000 new people that had never been to one of our performances before. And so that's really exciting, finding new ways to attract and introduce new audiences to whether it's classical concerts or mixed concerts. We had a great concert with Esperanza Spalding. We had another great concert with the Dandy Warhols and with the Decemberists. And so all kinds of different ways for people to go. And quite frankly, check out of the stresses of the everyday and just enjoy themselves and really be enriched by the stuff that they're seeing on stage.
Yeah, and plenty of stresses of the day these days, for sure.
Absolutely.
Check on it. What lessons from your previous work, whether within the arts or outside of it, directs you now?
The first lesson that I really learned in my time volunteering with arts organizations is what matters first and foremost is the quality of the stuff that you're putting on stage. Nothing else can make up for that. And so that's right at the center of what we do. Our musicians and the music that they make on the stage is what we really obsess about on a day in and day out basis. So that's first and foremost, the quality of the performances that we're offering to our audiences. Then also, obviously, with having worked in businesses for a long time, thinking about how you actually create a team and create a culture and really drive performance and empower people to really do things more than they even thought they could, or teams to do things more than they thought they were able to. I draw a lot of lessons from working for people like Patrick Kreitzer, who was the CEO of Tillamook, who I learned a lot from, and other bosses that I've had, about how do you actually organize an organization to a vision that, quite frankly, is achievable, but stretching. It's something that really is going to be hard to do, but it's going to be worthy to do. So I bring sort of those two streams together, the quality stuff that we put on stage and having the ambition and the effort to actually bring a vision of something that's really great into reality.
That's terrific. And we were talking about Tillamook cheese before we started taping. Love the stuff. Thanks for that.
Everyone
part
does.
Yeah, for sure. Well, so you've already launched a strategic planning process involving musicians, staff, and board. What's working well there now, and what do you think needs to be improved?
So we, as a result of the whole effort to put together a new strategic plan for the orchestra, identified four key objectives, four things that we know we need to do to achieve our vision going forward, where we're going to reimagine the orchestra and what it can mean for a community. It starts with financial resiliency. That's a challenge for all arts organizations right now, and so that's obviously a real key thing that we've got to focus on. Then there's also becoming a community cornerstone. And what we mean by that is we're already a cultural cornerstone. As you referenced before, we've been here for almost 130 years. We're actually the oldest symphony orchestra on the West Coast. So we've got a great legacy there. And so people in the cultural landscape of Portland know about us. But we want to get to a place where everybody in the community has a relationship with us in one way, form, or fashion. Then we're also always thinking about how do we grow our talents? How do we grow the ability of our orchestra to give great art, the ability of our popular program to put stuff on stage that really thrills people, our board to be more engaged, and our staff to deliver even greater. So grow our talents is also a focus. And the last one is really upgrade every stakeholder experience. You know, right now there's such a competition with audiences and patrons for things for them to do, from movies to sports and all the rest. So we've got to make sure that the experience that they have with us is the best they're going to have when they decide to, quite frankly, take a night off from whatever they're doing and come to see us at Arlene Schnitzer Hall.
Wow. And you touched on this a little bit. Interesting, the Oregon Symphony Orchestra is the oldest on the West Coast, a long history it has. But for some people, it can maybe still feel out of reach or unfamiliar. As president and CEO, you're thinking about the future and the next generation of listeners. What's your plan to make the symphony matter to more people and to kind of reach those next generations there at the concert hall?
Yeah, you know, there's this sort of false narrative that's out there. It's people think that the only people that go to the symphony are like in white tie and tails every night. And I tell people, if you go to the symphony, you're going to see someone in ripped jeans and Metallica shirt sitting next to someone in a gown. Because just like all the rest of Portland, it's come as you are. And so there aren't any barriers to entry in terms of people coming to just try out the art. You're going to feel comfortable. And there are different ways for us to, quite frankly, give people an on-ramp into, let's say, classical music. So coming up in the spring, we've got a program called Naked Classics. Now, everybody's going to be clothed, but what it is we're going to actually take a really famous piece of music, Mussorgsky's Pictures and Exhibition, and we're going to break it down for people, the audience. We're going to actually explain to them what they're hearing and talk about how the piece was constructed and what it means, and then we're going to perform it for them so that they understand what they're listening to. And so we're finding different ways, quite frankly, to have people either access classical music, or again, we've got lots of popular programming. We've got lots of great kids programming. In January, we've got a Sherlock Holmes kids concert that we're really, really excited about. And again, that's just giving kids access to music. And then, of course, we've got popular program. We've got Jimmy Harrod, who's coming. He's obviously a very famous singer. And so what we try to do is we offer our audiences lots of different ways to access music, which is something that, again, will thrill them and enrich them. And as we're increasingly finding out, contribute to their well-being. There's a lot of research out there, which is important, obviously, to us, particularly we've got in our state entities like OHSU and Providence Health, that there's a real intersection between wellness and music and art. And we're really trying to mine that for all of our audiences.
Absolutely. What a broad spectrum there that really should draw in people from throughout the community.
Yeah.
It's wonderful. Well, you touched on this as well, but get some more specifics about what's coming up in the coming season. And we've got the holidays upon us right now.
So we've had a great holiday season. Our Gospel Christmas, which this was our 26th year, was really successful. That's where we bring actually gospel singers from from about 30 different organizations here in town, and they come together and have a concert. That's something that's always great. We just had our Holiday Pops, which was really well received. We've got left now, we've got Elf in concert. So if you like Will Ferrell and that movie, and to listen to live music being played along with it, that's this weekend. And then we've got, of course, one of our signature partners, Thomas Lauderdale and Pink Martini are going to be playing for New Year's Eve. And that is always just a wild time. And so there's still tickets available for that. So that's what we've got for the holiday season. Mm-hmm. After the holidays, as I mentioned, we've got some kids concerts. How to Train Your Dragon as a film is coming in the spring. We've also got a really great concert coming up where we're going to be playing one of the most famous pieces in all of classical music, Beethoven's Symphony No. 3, the Eroica Symphony. Whether you like classical music or not, you've actually heard the music before because it's so famous. And at that concert, we're also featuring our concertmaster, Sarah Kwok, who is amazing, who plays with us every week. She leads the orchestra, and she's going to be playing the Berg Violin Concerto. We're really excited to highlight that for her. And so those are some concerts that are coming up in the near term. Over the course of the spring, we've got a lot of other great stuff, including a Bang It Festival, which is a percussion festival, which we're going to be highlighting. Mm. A lot of different percussion ensembles, our own percussionists. We're actually going to be playing the Danny Elfman Percussion Concerto. That's the guy who actually composed the music to The Simpsons and Batman.
Right. Yeah.
Stuff like that. So just a lot of great stuff. If you go to orsymphony.org, you can see all the stuff that we've got coming up over the spring. And one thing that I always like to highlight is if you are a student, if you are in high school or in college, any student in this town from kindergarten through college can go to our website and get a ticket to any one of our concerts for $10.
Wow.
Any one of our concerts. We always want to invite young people in to go and see new concerts, whether it's our popular concerts or our classical concerts. $10 for any student over the course of the spring. That's always available to them through our website.
Wow, that is a great thing, and that should draw people in. And what a great variety of events and concerts coming up throughout the next year.
Yeah, it's going to be exciting.
Thank you so much for sharing all that. And we're going to take a short break now, and when we come back, we'll continue our conversation and touch on the symphony's role in the broader community. Stay with us. And welcome back. We are continuing our conversation with President and CEO of the Oregon Symphony, Paul Snyder. Paul, thanks again for being with us.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, we often think of the symphony on the stage, but there's also a lot happening in the community and partnerships, outreach. What can you tell us about how that's going and what you plan for the future?
We're really, really proud of our community and educational programs, particularly the stuff that we have around kids. We have relationships with over 300 schools. We reach over 200,000 school children a year. And that, we feel, is a really critical part of our mission. Not only to expose kids to music, but to engage them in the idea that music can be a part of their lives, whether they're performing it or just enjoying it. That's something that we take a lot of pride in. We've got kinder concerts that we do at local schools. That's where actually our musicians will go out. They'll do kind of a fun program with a lot of bad dad jokes with the kids and expose them to different parts of music. We also recently did something this past week that we've done for a number of years where we actually go online and our musicians perform for 30 hospitals virtually. Mm. This is something that started during COVID for kids who are in hospitals over the holidays. You know, that's very tough. And so we do a special concert for those kids and live stream that to over 30 hospitals. Really proud of that. And honestly, bringing kids into the hall itself. We often bring in high school students, groups of high school students to see either rehearsals or daytime performances. Again, part of our mission is to show everyone in the community how music can not only be a part of their life, but can be really something central to their well-being, something really central to the enjoyment of living in Portland. Mm. And again, with the level of art that we're able to put on stage, both with our classical and our popular programming, we really embrace that mission for adults, kids, everyone.
Wow, and I take you back to what you talked about first in reaching children in schools. That is fantastic. As someone who benefited from being involved with music through my schooling, and it continues beyond that, right? And it's such a great thing to instill, and it's such a great way to unify and to learn and to grow.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah. How might the symphony deepen its relationship with like local artists, schools, and cultural organizations? You talked a lot about the schools, but how about local artists particularly?
Yeah, we really embrace our mission as the largest arts organization, one of the largest arts organizations in Portland, to raise up other voices. That's part of what Sounds Like Portland was about. That's where we actually used our platform, whether it's our website or whether it's our concert hall, to actually give a platform for local artists that normally probably wouldn't be seen by a lot of our audiences. So we really embrace the idea that we can give highlight to some of those small, less known artists. And our musicians do that also. There are a number of smaller chamber type of ensembles that our musicians play in that we support our musicians to play in those organizations. And that gives access to music in smaller venues and different kinds of venues. We played in Revolution Hall during Sounds Like Portland. And all kinds of different places around town so that no matter where you are, you can have a chance to go listen to some great music. And so our role is not just to play great pieces of art. Our role is not just to put on great popular program, but our role is also to highlight those that might be the next genius artists that we'll all know their name. And so we really embrace that role and are proud of it.
Yeah. And when you're in the concert hall, it's a big production. Kind of break it down. How many musicians are there? How big is the organization?
So generally we have 77 musicians, though depending on the piece, we might have a few more or a few less. We've got a great group of musicians here in town that we can call on if we need a bigger ensemble. We've got a bunch of people obviously behind the scenes, also in our production department. It is really an amazing operation to see how they set up the rehearsals and they schedule those, that our musicians get. I mean, we have librarians that work on getting all their sheet music right. For anybody who's ever played a stringed instrument, you know there are bowings about whether you pull down or up, and yeah. We've got librarians that do all that, putting all those signals on the page. And so it's really a highly coordinated effort so that when you actually get to the point where you're in the audience and sitting on stage and the orchestra just comes on stage, there's a whole raft of activity that's happened before that and behind the scenes during that to make really what is an incredible moment come off. If you think about it, there are not too many things in life where you're putting together 80 people on a stage and asking them to do exactly the same thing in perfect coordination. That's not easy to do. Our musicians are incredibly talented, but they're not on that stage just because of their talent. They're on that stage because they work really, really, really hard at that. And so it's really a privilege, quite frankly, as the president and CEO to see all of that from behind the scenes and how it comes alive on stage.
Yep. And on stage in such a beautiful spot, the Arlene Schnitzer Concert Hall is just gorgeous.
It really is. Yep.
And it's downtown, and you talked about this a little bit earlier, but talk some more about the connection between the symphony and downtown Portland, the revitalization, how you see things going right now and what still needs to come.
You know, I think anybody who has spent time in the downtown core over the last 3, 4, or 5 years recognizes how much better it was from really what it was its bottom. And we had some very, very tough times there. And we've still got room to go, for sure. But you ask anybody who's coming down to one of our concerts on any of our concert nights, and it's a great experience. And that's thanks to the fact, first and foremost, that the best way to make the downtown feel good is to have lots of foot traffic and lots of people down there. And so whether it's us or it's any of our arts partners from the Portland Museum of Art or from the Oregon Ballet or any of the other arts partners or people that put on shows that bring people to the downtown core, when there are people there, it's fun to be around. I also give a lot of credit, quite frankly, to Downtown Clean and Safe. They're the heroes of the downtown. And the way that they, quite frankly, make it a comfortable place for all of us. And so I give them just a tremendous amount of credit. They're great partners to all of us in making sure that when people come downtown, they're coming to a clean and safe environment. And so I think that the more that people who have not yet been back to the downtown core in the last number of years, give it a shot. You're going to be surprised at how much fun you have and what a great experience it is. And we build that momentum and keep that momentum up. And then we're going to create a future, like I said, that's even better than the past that we've all talked about. And ultimately, there are wins that are happening downtown. The Portland Museum of Art just opened its Rothko expansion, which is amazing. Jessica Elkin and her people at the James Beard Market are going to be opening next year. There are things happening downtown that are really cool and fun. We're part of that as well. And so I think my invitation to anyone is, if you're wondering about what downtown's like, come and see it for yourself. You're going to actually be really surprised.
Absolutely. And you should know, Portland is a fantastic center for arts and culture, food. A lot of people come to visit here for that reason, and we want to keep them coming for sure.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, what does Portland, why does it need a major orchestra in 2025 and 26?
You know, every city that is a world-class city has art. Every city that's a world-class city has an orchestra. And there's a reason for that. It's because every civilization has had music. And so there's something really foundational about our experience as human beings that music and art speak to. And as I referenced before, there's a growing body of literature, science-based literature, that is generating an understanding about how art in general and music in particular promotes wellness, promotes emotional resilience. I think about when we first started to have all the stuff happening down in the South Waterfront with the ICE facility. And we had a concert that very week. And the concert was Simone Porter, who's an amazing violinist, came in and did the Glass Violin Concerto. And the second half of the concert, we did the Rachmaninoff Symphony No. 2, a really famous romantic piece. And the audience applauded between every single movement. Now, normally people say, oh, you don't applaud till the end, but the audience applauded between every single movement. And even our musicians on stage were like, whoa, what's going on there? Well, I think what was going on is people needed that feeling of nourishment and enrichment and just thrill and joy of the music, and they wanted to express their appreciation for it. They couldn't help it. And so at a time where things can quite frankly feel really stressful with a lot going on in the world, we're increasingly understanding our role, not just in showing great pieces of art or showing people great music or popular programs that are really fun to go to, but quite frankly, it's not a refuge from the world, it's a connection to the world. Because when you're in that concert hall with 2,700 other people, whether you're seeing a movie or you're seeing a symphony or you're seeing a rock band, what you're doing is something collectively together, and the energy in that room binds us together. It's a shared experience, it feels good, and that's something that quite frankly is central to the human experience. And so Portland as a place where people love to come together, people love to enjoy life, part of that is enjoying music and the arts.
And we're doing that now, and we will do that in the future. What do you see, what do you think things will look like a year from now?
You know, I'm a big believer in Portland. I love this town. My wife and I wanted to live here for many years before we moved here. She actually grew up in Corvallis, and that's why we've always had Portland on our radar screen. I think anybody who counts Portland out is missing the boat. If you actually look at this town and look at the kind of ethos and kind of just spirit that people have in this town, it's unlike any that I've experienced in a lot of other places. You referenced before that I was in the hotel business for a long time. Mm-hmm. So I've been to most of the major cities in the United States. And Portland has something special. We don't have a word for it in English, I tell people. You know, it's like the French call it joie de vivre and the Italians call it, you know, la dolce vita. But there is an enjoyment of each other and of life here in Portland that is really unique and special. And people that come here and actually see it live get it. And that's why a lot of people end up staying.
Yeah.
So I see a future of Portland a year from now, 5 years from now, 10 years from now, where that still is our governing ethos and where we still are a place where people say, you know, where you can go to either visit and have a wonderful time or go to live and have a great life. And that's Portland, Oregon.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. What's your favorite kind of music, Paul?
You know, I'm a kind of an omnivore. I really like all kinds of music, but I do have a special affinity for classical music. I grew up playing trombone. I was in an orchestra in Chicago where I grew up. I actually, one time, was actually conducted by James DePriest, who was the music director of the Oregon Symphony for 23 years. So that's a weird coincidence.
Yeah, right.
But one of the things I love about music is that whatever your mood or wherever you are, whatever you're doing, there's a piece of music that can be the soundtrack to it. And so I really like all kinds of music. I think anyone can find anything out there that quite frankly either moves them or speaks to them, or something that I really enjoy talking with people is, you know, what is a piece of music that transports you back to a memory? Mm-hmm. You know, I think about like a piece like Sibelius Symphony No. 3, which makes me think about my time in college. Or I think about, you know, Peter Gabriel's So, which makes me think about my time in high school,
yeah,
right? And
beautiful.
So that's the great thing about music is that it's so visceral. It can both engage you in the moment or transport you to somewhere else or connect you with someone new. If you say, hey, you like that person, I do too. So for me, music is just so expansive and universal, it's hard for me to pick a favorite kind.
Well, thanks for naming all those, because they're all wonderful examples for sure. Paul Snyder, thanks so much for joining us today. We really appreciate it.
Thanks. It was great to be here. Yeah.
And thank you so much for joining us here on Straight Talk. A reminder, you can stream Straight Talk on your own schedule. Just download the free TV app, KGW Plus. That's available now on Roku, Apple TV, and Fire TV. Happy holidays, everyone.